This is Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Keck. The course of history is often shaped by the outcome of battles, even small ones. That's the case with the Battle of Bennington, which was fought back in August 1777, more than 2 years after the start of the Revolutionary War. Phil Holland says it marked the moment in the European settlement of North America when power tipped from the old world to the new. Holland is an English teacher at Community College of Vermont and the author of the new book, A Guide to the Battle of Bennington and the Bennington Monument. He joins me now to talk about the battle and why it was so important in helping the colonists defeat the British. Phil Holland, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Nina, nice to talk to you.
Well, first of all, before we get into the details of the Battle of Bennington, I found it interesting that it wasn't, in fact, fought in Bennington. So what gives on that?
The supply depot that the British Army was after was located in Bennington, and a detachment was sent by General Burgoyne towards Bennington to capture cattle and wagons. What Burgoyne didn't realize was that there were 1,500 New Hampshire militiamen recently raised from New Hampshire in response to a call from Vermont that were right there in Bennington and that went out to meet the advancing detachment, and they encountered each other in the little hamlet of Wollumsack, just over the Vermont-New York border.
So this battle occurred in 1777, well after the Green Mountain Boys had taken Fort Ticonderoga from the British in 1775. Explain briefly what was going on in the months leading up to the Battle of Bennington.
The British had failed to put down the rebellion in 75 and 76, although they almost accomplished it in New York in 1776. And so they decided to get serious. And General Burgoyne conceived a plan whereby he would invade from Canada down the Champlain corridor towards the Hudson with about 9,000 men. He would be met there by another British force advancing from the west down the Mohawk Valley, and a third force coming up from New York, which never came. And so they would lop the New England colonies off from the rest of the colonies and thereby isolate them. They were the most rebellious colonies, and that was to put an end to things.
But, you know, it's interesting. Your article explains how Burgoyne, the British general, had the superior manpower. You mentioned how many thousands were coming down from Canada and various other points. But talk about some of the logistical challenges they faced. I was surprised to hear about that there was a shortage of draft animals to pull the equipment and supplies. There was a shortage of horses. And the fact that a lot of their food was brought in from Canada or from England, which is probably why they were headed for Bennington.
That's right. And ultimately, it was the logistics that were Burgoyne's undoing. Eventually, he ran out of food, for that matter, in September, October, when he was defeated at Saratoga. But to provision an army of close to 9,000 men and to float supplies upriver from the St. Lawrence, from Montreal, all the way to Ticonderoga and Fort George and eventually Albany, that was a tall order when you don't have adequate, especially animals, to drag your guns and your supplies. Merely to feed your horses takes a lot of hay.
Right.
And that's what he wanted.
So, and as far as I understand from your article, he found out that this supply storehouse was in Bennington, and didn't they change routes and said, let's go there instead?
Yeah, they were headed straight to Albany, but they thought they'd just make a little foray, a raid into Bennington, and pick up a few supplies.
Get some groceries.
Yeah, so to speak. They sent a force of 650 men, most of them German. There were only 50 British soldiers in that British detachment. The rest were mercenaries from the German state of Brunswick, but they were professionals, and they thought they had easy pickings there in Bennington. It didn't turn out to be the case.
They were met with a lot more opposition than they expected. You write that General George Washington predicted with amazing accuracy how this battle and the situation with Burgoyne and the German mercenaries would unfold. How did he know?
Well, that's almost a month before. When things were not looking good, Burgoyne took back Ticonderoga without a fight. He simply overwhelmed threatened the American defenses, and the Americans put their tails between their legs and escaped by night. That was humiliating for the bulwark of Northern defenses just to collapse like that. And about 10 days later, Washington very confidently predicted that Burgoyne, in his overconfidence, would make a mistake. In fact, would divide his force, would send a detachment of, and he almost called the numbers right, 400, 500, 600 men. And if the Americans could beat that detachment, defeat them, it would spirit up the American cause, and people would enlist. Psychologically, there would be relief. Now, at this point, there were no signs on the horizon that this might take place. The New Hampshiremen had not yet even been recruited. But Washington, or perhaps his handy 22-year-old aide-de-camp, Hamilton, who did a lot of his correspondence, and for that matter, thinking for him, conceived what would happen, and sure enough, that's exactly the way it happened. Astonishing.
General Stark, who was leading some of the New Hampshire soldiers, I understand had scouts pretending to be British loyalists, passing through these British and German troops to assess their strengths and do some spying. How dangerous was that, and how often did that kind of spying go on?
It must have been very difficult for the British-German contingent. I mean, the German commander didn't even speak English, to distinguish between loyalists and colonists, who were often friends and neighbors, or at least enemies and neighbors, relations in some cases. And they were loyalists joining the British all the time. So if you arrived in camp, declared yourself a loyalist, you'd
it's
swear
pretty
an
hard
oath.
It's pretty hard to tell the difference, it sounds like.
Yeah, they'd be dressed, they'd have the same appearance and language, and they wouldn't all know each other, so these New Hampshiremen could present themselves as new recruits.
And how important was the information those spies brought back to the colonial forces?
It must have been very important, because it rained heavily the day after the first sighting of one force by the other. And so the Americans had a chance to scout the positions and knew just where each defense was, how many people were in it, and developed a plan to envelop the forces based on the information they had. So their intelligence was much better than the British intelligence of the U.S. force.
Well, the battle, when it finally came on August 17th, sounds fierce. How long did it last, and what happened?
It was not one, but two battles, or even more if you count the particular fights in various places. But certainly there were two engagements. Each side had sent for reinforcements when they first encountered each other on the 14th. And especially on the German side, the British side, those reinforcements were anxiously awaited. There was another force of equal size on the way, but it got delayed in the mud, and they lost their way, and their horses hadn't been fed. And the Americans, too, had asked the Green Mountain Boys, or Continental Rangers as they were, who were up in Manchester, to come down and help out. Neither force had arrived, but Stark sent out the signal to attack at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and the battle raged for 2 hours. The Americans won, but of course the battle wasn't over, because then the German reinforcements arrived, just a little too late to offer the kind of resistance that they could have had they been on time. And they began to turn the tide and win the day. The colonial forces, the American forces, were dispersed and mopping up and drinking rum. So the Germans advanced, and at that moment, just when the cause appeared to be lost, Seth Warner's Green Mountain contingent arrived. They were experienced soldiers who had a score to settle because they'd been defeated at Hubbardton. And they, in turn, turned the tide again and defeated that second force.
And it sounds like
set in.
And that battle ripple effect really helped kind of turn the tide for the finish of the war later on.
In two ways. One, Burgoyne lost men and materiel, but never got his provisions, which delayed his advance to Saratoga and Albany. But it also psychologically dealt a blow to Burgoyne and inspired the Americans to enlist, so that when Burgoyne finally made it to north of Albany, there were many to oppose him there.
Well, I'll have to leave it there. Phil Holland, thank you very much.
Thank you, Nina.
Phil Holland is an English teacher at Community College of Vermont and the author of the new book, A Guide to the Battle of Bennington and the Bennington Monument.